Please be seated. Good morning. This is the time and the place set for the court's annual rules hearing, which is held annually in February. The record may show that legal notice has been given as required by statute and court rules, and that we will proceed. Court's custom is to first off have people who oppose a rule speak on the theory that if no one's in opposition, the proponents can make brevity their virtue. So, with that, rules 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 were proposed by the state court administrator. Unfortunately, he can't be in two places at once, and he's upstairs in a hearing in the Judiciary Committee. Does anybody wish to speak in opposition to any of those rules? Does anybody wish to speak on behalf of them?
Okay.
A proponent.
Good morning. I'll take my cue and keep this brief. I had intended to as well. Pat Archer, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the Attorney General's Office. As the court is well aware, our office files a significant number of briefs every year. Looking at this proposed rule, it appears to me that it's a good idea. I like the consistency of it. We're already doing it in circuit court. Of course, federal court filing is online as well. We've had a version of electronic filing now for some years with the court, but I see this as a great next step to just be consistent with the way we're doing it in circuit court. So for that reason, we're in favor. Obviously, with anything that, sometimes the devil's in the details. I recognize that some of these proposed rules are a little bit different or don't incorporate exactly the same concepts exactly that are in the current circuit court rules for Odyssey, File and Serve. Speaking with the clerk, I suspect that maybe some of those details are yet to be worked out. I don't know, but there are, a couple points that I'd recognize that, maybe just give me questions, not an objection at all to the proposals, just to kind of questions on the implementation of it. Be happy to talk about those now or address it to the court administrator or the clerk at some other time.
Maybe address them to Mr. Satizan and the clerk later, unless you think it's serious enough it merits our...
No, again, it's just implementation. We're happy to file our documents any way the court desires.
All right, thank you, Ms. Archer.
Thank you.
Wait a minute, any questions from the bench?
None.
Oh, I guess you're free to go. Thank you. Anybody else wish to speak on behalf of proposed rules 1 through 5? If not, proposed rule 6 is proposed by the Judicial Qualifications Commission. Does anybody wish to be heard in opposition? There being none, does anybody wish to be heard in support of it? Guess there's none there either. All right. Rule 7 is proposed by the State Court Administrator. Does anybody wish to speak in opposition to that? If not, does anybody want to speak on behalf of it? Okay, there being none, we'll move to Rule 8, which is proposed by the Bar Examiners. And they propose Rule Number 9, Number 10, Number 11. So, does anybody wish to be heard in opposition to those? There being none, does anybody wish to speak on behalf? Mr. Fulton.
Thank you, Your Honor, and I will heed the admonition to be brief. I just will remind the court and our thousands of listeners on the internet what we're doing with these rules, mostly kind of modernizing some of our rules. We addressed our fees, which had not been touched since 1998, and we just applied an inflationary adjustment to those using a common inflationary table, bringing those up to a current fee. We went slightly beyond what just a strict adjustment would have been, I think $20 on one and $30 on the other, just to reflect that we won't have to make that change next year to keep up with inflation. So we increased inflationary. We also got in line with most states by allowing those folks who are going to waive in by years of practice to have three of the last 5 years be practice as opposed to five contiguous. We were really the only one that was doing a five continuous. Most states had some variety, whether it's 7 of 10, 5 of 10, we went 3 of 5. That's what some of the folks did and was consistent with what we were doing. We did several rules just sort of clean up our regulations, moving our application deadline to May as opposed to April, which is just a practicality of when people get results, going to one copy as opposed to five for a storage issue, allowing credit card payments when the technology catches up. And I think one thing that I do want to highlight is picking up on the discussion of rules last year. We are asking to be able to post an exam result for students. They will be able to come and review their exam here with the bar secretary, the question and their answer. We have heard from people who've taken the bar that reviewing those answers and studying is helping them, and they're getting passage the second or third time, so we felt like that was important to do. We're also going to look at posting, like Minnesota does with NCB permission, a question and an answer that we view a model answer, so everyone who's taking the exam now will be able to opt in or out of letting us use their answer. We'll probably modify that to give sort of a rubric that's an optimal answer for the question that people can have access and hopefully learn from. With that, Your Honor, I'd take any questions.
Any questions from the bench?
I have a couple of questions. On the amendment to 16-16-11, this would provide that absent a showing of exceptional circumstances, an applicant who's failed 4 times or in any jurisdiction will not be granted permission to sit. Under this rule, unless the applicant has obtained a scaled score of at least 125 on a prior MBE examination. Do you have any comment on that?
I can, Justice Kern. I mean, what I would tell you is that looking at the performance of people over time, unfortunately, if you are not within some version of striking distance, just statistically, the odds of you passing are pretty small. Not to say that there aren't outliers who do it, but we don't see massive progress from exam to exam from people. So if you're sitting there at 118, 120, the reality of you trying to get to 133 is, I would say, vanishingly small. Not to say it cannot happen, but it doesn't typically happen. We also just generally don't see people after the fourth time, frankly, get there in most instances. I will tell you, not everyone will agree with that. I mean, I don't think everyone even on the board would agree with that. I will tell you, my personal observation is that you can let people take as many times as they want, and that's their choice. You can tell them you get 3 strikes and you're out, and that's a different way to do it. I think the one thing that has been of relevance is the repeat takers, particularly when bar exam results fell, we're weighing down our perceived results, weighing down the law school's results. I think people now focus on first-time takers, and the ABA is considering moving towards a first 2 years taking, so I don't think it has quite the impact it did before. That's kind of a long-winded way of saying doing whatever you want. Those are kind of the pros and cons of doing it, but I think the real concern about multi-time takers, people now get the data and maybe can discern the reality of that and what it means and doesn't mean.
Any concern about the 125 number? We'd be the only state in the union that would be setting a number, a cutoff demarcation.
You know, anytime you pick a number, someone's going to be on either side of it. There's going to be somebody sitting there to 124. I'll just guarantee you, you know, it's going to happen. And can I tell you, metaphysically, it's the right number? No. Can I tell you that if you're not, in our experience, close to that 133, particularly after 4 times, are you getting there? You know, the math says no. So it's the classic contrast of stats versus individual cases here. You know, I mean, I feel comfortable with the 125 number, but just can guarantee you right now there's going to be somebody sitting at a 124.
Historically, based on your experience, has somebody with a 120 got much of a chance of making it the next time?
Statistically, no. It's happened, but sure. Statistically, no.
All right.
I also have a question on number 11, 4.1.
Mm-hmm.
The Board of Bar Examiner's decision as to whether an applicant has passed or failed the examination is final and not subject to review.
Sorry.
Is there any form of review available? I mean, some states have procedures in place that allow an applicant to seek either hand scoring of the MBE done by the MBE or a regrading of their essays if for example, they're within 5% of passing, 10%, a couple of points, something like
that. Right.
Right. So no is the answer here. This is the practice that has always been. It just hasn't been codified in the regulations. We wanted to put that on there lest someone come and say, hey, we want to take this to some location that doesn't exist. I would say when it comes to regrading the essays in particular, I think it's more of a concern in some other states where you have multiple examiners grading the same exam, for example. So you've got two examiners both grading criminal procedure. One of the advantages of being a relatively small bar with smart applicants here is one examiner grades them all. So I don't know what I'm grading this February. Let's say it's criminal law, which would be convenient for me. I'm reading all those. And so also, since we don't scale, since we have a raw passage number, I am putting people on pass, on fail. And I think all of us go through the exams once and read them. You quickly get the sense of obviously passed, obviously didn't. And we all go through multiple times those folks that are very close. And so for all of us, knowing that you are making a pass-fail decision about that individual in a way that you don't in a scaling state, we read the people who are right at that number multiple times very carefully. So they have been read multiple times is the one thing I would tell you.
And so then the MBE, there's no opportunity to have that rescaled by the national entity?
I honestly don't know the answer to that, Justice Curran, if that's something we can make available. I mean, the point of the rule is not to say that if the NCBE will go back through it, that we're telling you you can't do that. What we're saying is they don't have the opportunity to appeal their exam results to the court and say, we want you to grade the exams or things like that.
Which did happen.
Before?
Yes, we've been asked to regrade bar exams.
Right.
That was not approved.
Right. And that was the reason for the rule, is just so that it's explicit out there and everyone can point to the regulation and say, no, that's not available.
So if an applicant requested hand scoring of their multi-state bar exam, that would not be covered by this rule necessarily as a
regulation. I don't know. Sorry to interrupt, but I don't know that we can cover that because that's an NCBE decision. I mean, that's not our decision. I mean, the NCBE gives us the number.
So that would be between the applicant and the NCBE.
I will be corrected by Ms. Anderson or the NCBE, but I believe so, Justice Kern.
So if they did make a deal with them, that outfit, they regraded it, and they said, well, guess what? You did pass. You would accept the second communication from the grading computer or whatever it is.
We accept the number that NCBE gives us for the MBE, yes.
All right. Okay, we got more.
I have a question, Chief, if I might. Okay. Back to 16-16-11, Mr. Fulton. And I understand your response, and I appreciate the competing views that could exist among a group of people. My question now is, has the board ever examined or become aware of any correlation, and I don't know if one exists or not, between folks who take the bar exam a number of times and subsequent performance within the profession? And I don't know what measure you would use for that. Do they become partners in firms, do they become this or that, or do they require supervision from a disciplinary standpoint? I don't know how you would look at that.
Nationwide, Justice Salter, the NCBE does find that people with lower scores, multiple takers, there is a correlation between that and discipline, which would be the best, I think, probably metric. That's the NCBE's data. We haven't run data for South Dakota. Anecdotally, for those bar examiners who've been on longer or prior bar examiners, that is consistent with their experience when I've talked to them. I mean, I haven't been on long enough to be able to say, fortunately, about anyone, but that's the NCBE's data, and that's consistent with the experience of bar examiners here, that low scores, multiple takers, frequently does correlate with discipline. Again, playing the numbers game, not a guarantee,
understood,
but if you have the person who blows it out, they're less likely to be a subject of discipline.
Understood. Thank you.
Any further questions from the bench for Mr. Fulton? If not, thank you for coming.
Thank you,
appreciate
Your Honor.
It, and thank the bar exams for a good job. Well done.
You bet. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, then we're going to go to 12 and 13. These are proposed by the State Bar of South Dakota. Anybody wish to speak in opposition? Okay, does anybody wish to speak in support?
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice and members of the court. It's a new experience for me. I write contracts for a living, so it's always my goal to never have a document in front of you because that means I didn't do a very good job. But I'm coming to you as a member of the Bar Commission and primary drafter.
We're on the internet. Can you identify yourself?
I'm sorry, forgive me. I am Rod Tobin. I'm a partner with Siegelbert & Schutz. I bring you greetings from the frozen tundra of Aberdeen, South Dakota. It was another interesting drive here today, but I made it safe and sound. So in any event, I apologize for the slip-up in the procedure part. It was my pleasure to be able to work with the Bar Commission and have something in my wheelhouse, so to speak, with bylaws as opposed to what you normally hear, things like court cases. And so we worked for several months to take what had been a body of language that had over time been added to and kind of subparts added and sections added and tried to turn it into a cohesive document more in keeping with bylaws that are for an organization such as this or a nonprofit organization. And other than some pretty combative episodes with Clerk Williams over whether to use a serial comma or not, it went pretty smoothly. So I am here to answer any questions about the bylaws. I do want to point out, I guess, for the court, our executive director would normally be probably presenting this, but as you know, we've had a transition to a new executive director, and Andy was not really part of the Bar Commission when all this work was done. He came on essentially for the approval by the bar membership in June. And so when the chance appeared to appear in front of you distinguished folks, I volunteered because my only chance to be here. So.
And for some strange reason, you couldn't coax Tom Barnett back from Florida to this lovely climate.
You know, Tom just proved that he's pretty smart. So I wouldn't coax him back here for anything. But I do want to point out in Andy's letter to you on page 52, the last paragraph of that letter does say that, and I think that's a factual statement, that we did our best to comply with all the current rules or statutes. There is a conflict in paragraph section 4.2 regarding submission of the list. The bylaws now say April 15th. Current statute 16.17.11 says March 15th. The reason that the bylaws chose a different date is when we were dealing with Executive Director Barnett, he simply said that because of the way the dues were being collected in the past, complying with that deadline oftentimes didn't happen. We're not trying to usurp the statute. We worked really hard to implement a new dues collection timing so that I think compliance with the statutory timeframe of March 15th going forward will be much more likely, and I just talked with Andy about that today, as a matter of fact. So I just wanted to make that clear that there actually is a conflict with that particular statute regarding what the bylaws say. Clearly, statute's going to govern over the bylaws. You have to comply, but I will tell you in the past, that has been a difficult compliance matter for the bar committee, for the state bar.
Thank you, Mr. Tobin. Are there any questions from the bench for Mr. Tobin? If not, thank you for coming from Aberdeen.
I greatly appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today, so thank you.
Safe travels.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. That would then complete the proposed 13 rules. The court will take these under advisement and act at an appropriate time. We are in recess.